This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. And we're looking for a leak that has been a confounding story for more than a year, I believe. But Bob's going to help me. This is a leak on ISS, for heaven's sakes. Bob, a very good evening to you. The Russians go right. The Americans go left. Is there someone in the middle? Who's Sherlock Holmes? Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. This air leak problem on ISS has been going on far more than a year. It's probably about 3 years now that this leak has been a problem. And the leak is not one leak. It focuses on the section of the Zvezda module. That's the third oldest module on ISS, and it's more than 30 years old, because it was built long before it was launched, and it was launched 22 years ago, more than 20 years ago. And the section that is a problem is the section where Progress freighters and Soyuz sometimes dock with the station. This is on the Russian half of the station. And they must have docked more than 100 times to this module. And there started to be an air leak problem about 3 years ago, where they couldn't find the leak, and they finally traced it to this section of Zvezda, where it found cracks that appeared to be stress fracture cracks. And so they managed to plug some of those and reinforce some of the cracks, the Russian astronauts. But essentially, there's a very big concern. They haven't been able to stop the leaking. So right now what happens is Russians keep that part of the module hatch closed all the time. The only time they open it is when they're going to unload material from the module, from a Progress freighter that is docked. Or they're going to load stuff into the Progress freighter. However, what makes this story significant is there is a significant disagreement between NASA and the Russians about the seriousness of the problem. The Russians say that all they really need to do is close that hatch most of the time and leave it that way. And then when they can dock, keep docking continuously and unload supplies and then close the hatch. NASA is much more worried about a catastrophic failure of Zvezda's module with these dockings. Baker are concerned that a Progress freighter will attempt to dock with Zvezda, and those stress fractures will cause the module section to collapse, and we have a major leak. I'm not talking about a real escape of air from the whole station. So because of that, NASA and the Russians don't think it's that serious, and they have not been able to come to an agreement. And so what the Americans are now doing, NASA is now doing, is they're instructing their astronauts, when any docking operation is going on with Zvezda, the Americans are to close the hatch between the Russian and American half of the station. And in fact, if they're doing any loading or unloading from that module, which requires the Russians to open the hatch, American astronauts now close the hatch as well between the two halves of the station. As one astronaut says, it's uncomfortable because it does kind of separate the so-called partnership. But American NASA is very, very worried about this. Now, they're trying to discuss the issue and try to come up to some solution. The bottom line here is that this suggests strongly that the lifespan of ISS is limited. That the four commercial space stations that are under development right now need to get up into orbit in order to have a space operations and space research and for the future exploration of the solar system. And ISS is on a ticking time bomb in terms of its survival.
ISS also needs its orbit adjusted, and you say there's good news. Who's going to adjust the orbit, Bob?
Well, this is connected with the story, because the way they've been adjusting or raising the orbit, as it periodically needs to be, because it decays in the atmosphere, they use Progress freighters docked to Zvezda to do this. That's one of the other reasons that maybe it's caused so much strain on that module. And that's a reason there's concern, because, you know, if you have a Progress freighter docked there and it fires its thrusters to raise the station, it's putting a great deal of stress on that very part of the station, of the module that's got the stress fractures. So NASA has been working very hard to try to find alternatives to the Progress freighter. And so they they tested a Cygnus capsule to fire its thrusters to raise the orbit. They've now done the same thing with a cargo Dragon that's just docked to ISS. They used its Draco attitude thrusters to see if it could adjust the station's orbit. And yes, it was able to do so. This was a test. It did not move it very much. These thrusters don't appear to have as much power as some of the others. And so it was only a slight adjustment, but it does suggest very clearly that they are looking for ways to replace Progress Freighters to do this job, John, for the interim, because they it really is a problem. They're a concern of NASA, for sure.
SLS. Oh, Bob, it's all so disappointing, but we have to get right to it. A symposium, a space business symposium, is it talking factually, Bob?
No, this is a culture. This is trying to get a hint of what's going to happen. Right after the election, I predicted that the Trump administration arrival is almost certainly going to cause the cancellation of SLS and Orion, because there are better ways to do things, and Trump's going to look at these things, and it's going to finally decide that SLS is not the way to get people back to the moon or to explore the solar system. And I predicted that the day after. And, well, there have been a lot of indications, leaks, other reporters have talked to anonymous sources suggesting my prediction was 100% correct. There was a space business symposium in Washington earlier this week, and during it they had a panel discussion about what might happen in the future. And at one point, the former deputy administrator of NASA during the Obama administration, Lori Garver, who was on this panel, turned to the other panelists and said to ask them, she asked them what they thought the future of the Space Launch System, SLS and Orion, would be under the Trump administration. Do you think if it would continue? None of the panelists raised their hands. These are big space bureaucratic policy people within the executive branch of the government and connected with NASA almost completely. That these people do not think SLS Orion will continue under the Trump administration tells me that the culture in D.C. is now finally beginning to admit that SLS is a disaster. Has always been a disaster. I predicted it was a disaster in 2011. That's almost a lifetime ago. But they're now beginning to recognize it, and the reality of that is slipping in and is setting in. And I think that's where we stand in our coming future. I really do think that SLS, sometime in the next year, is going to get canceled. And there'll be big shockwaves, but it's going to happen, I think.
Environmental regulations in the courts. Now, the one I care about is Boca Chica. Does this touch that, Bob?
No, there was a yes and no. There was a major court decision early this week in which a two judge panel ruled that the White House Council on Environmental Quality has no statutory authority to impose any kind of environmental regulations within the government, and that it maybe invalidates a great deal of the environmental regulations across the board. It could be a very major decision. It's a very confused situation, but what strikes me that makes this important having to do with space is that this is not the first time in the last year or so, 2 years, that judges across the board from the Supreme Court on down are not just simply looking at the fringe language, petty, complex issues behind every court case, but they're actually looking at the statutory authority of environmental or any kind of government agencies, not just environmental. And in this case, the judges went past the issues of the case to look specifically at the statutory authority of the that Council on Environmental Quality and ruled it didn't have the authority. And this applies to future cases that we'll discuss next week, I think. The courts are moving in a direction to look more fundamentally at the legality of the bureaucracy, and they're ruling against the legality of the bureaucracy. And that does affect Boca Chica because it's been the bureaucracy that's been slowing everything down because they've taken on regulatory authorities they really do not have, and the courts are going to rule on that.
Rocket Lab, all good news, Bob, including a big boost in the stock market. What is Rocket Lab?
Rocket Lab is one of the new rocket startups that's been very successful. It's launched, what is it, more than 50 times. It's Electron rocket. It's developing a bigger new rocket called the Neutron rocket, which will be almost completely reusable, more reusable than anything, even SpaceX's rockets. And it's scheduled to launch the first time in 25. They have now gotten their first launch contract for Neutron. They didn't say who the customer was, but it's for launching an entire constellation of satellites. That announcement plus other parts of their quarterly report resulted in a 45% surge in their stock price. They are in strong position, John, and this deal for this other constellation for a rocket they haven't even launched yet tells us that company is solid right now and going to continue to be solid.
And Firefly, we like Firefly. Oh, Polaris first. Polaris with an aerospike engine. What is that?
Aerospike engine is a concept that's existed for more than a half century, whereby as the rocket launches, the shape of the nozzle should be reshaped depending on the atmosphere around it, how thick the atmosphere is, because you can't do that. So rocket engines routinely are not as efficient as they can be because for most of their flight, the nozzle isn't the right size. Aerospike engine is a concept whereby the thickness of the atmosphere itself acts as the nozzle. And so as the atmosphere thins the nozzle, the atmosphere forms a different shape, and it's efficient the whole way up. And this has been a concept for decades. It's never been tested in flight. There have been a number of attempts to build it, but they've always failed for a number of reasons. So no one's ever tested it in flight. Well, Polaris Space Planes is developing its own space plane, and it wants to use an aerospike engine, and it has a prototype, Mira 2, which it's been doing test flights on. But they've now, and the test flights have been successful, they now have attached an aerospike engine to Mira 2, and they've actually flown it, and they actually fired the aerospike engine for a very short time for an initial test, and that is the first time an aerospike engine has flown, as far as I know, and fired in the air. And they're going to do more tests of this, and eventually they're going to build a space plane using it. And so that's a big deal. It's potentially a major way to improve ways to get to space.
Now, Firefly, my favorite name for a rocket company. Firefly is raising money. I think they raised it just on the name because there was a cool movie that was supposed to turn into sort of a cowboy space movie, and I remember it vividly every time I see the name Firefly.
That's one of the reasons to pick the name, John, very clearly. They raised another $179 million in new private investment capital. That's on top of another $300 million they'd raised previously. Firefly is a company that had been bankrupt, and it was saved by a Ukrainian billionaire who eventually was forced out by the State Department. But the company has become, from ashes, it's become now one of the most successful rocket startups. It's launched its Alpha rocket a number of times. It is building a lunar lander for NASA. It is doing a lot of things, and so this company was able to raise a lot of money, and so they're in very good shape right now. I would say that without any question.
And another sign up for the Artemis Accords, Denmark. This is beginning to be a trend.
What the situation is most interesting to me, they have now 48 nations are part of the Artemis Accord Alliance. Denmark is the most recent one joined this week. What I think is significant about this is that the Artemis Accords were conceived during the first Trump administration as a way to build an alliance to get around the outer space treaties restrictions on private property and legal ownership of land in space. And the Biden administration has continued to sign people up, but they've tried to shift the focus away from that to actually reinforcing the outer space treaty. But they haven't really done much with it because they haven't accomplished very much. They're depending on SLS. Trump administration is coming back. I expect them to renew that effort. They now have a very large alliance of nations, most of whom are Western capitalist nations who like private property and individual ownership. So I think you're going to maybe see under the Trump administration movement once again to use the Artemis Accords and that alliance to change the outer space treaty or to get around it.
Quickly, Bob, Pakistan on the moon? quickly.
Yeah, well, Pakistan is signed up with China's alternative alliance in space, and they, one of the institutes in Pakistan has now signed a deal with China to put a small rover on China's Chang'e 8 lunar lander that's going to land on the south pole of the moon in 2030 and begin the construction of China's lunar base. And so Pakistan's going to put a small rover on that and participate in that. And that's the deal.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring, but we have some layoffs to talk about first. I'm John Bashley.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Bachelor.